In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Well, as I record this, it's been about 48 hours since the polls closed in America, and I'm just going to scroll through social media for a bit to find out what's happening in the election. A suspicious person is wheeling what looks to be boxes of ballots into a vote counting center. Not great. A whole whack of votes were just dumped overnight at a precinct in Michigan? Whoa, some Arizona ballots are being disqualified because voters used a Sharpie to fill them out. A bunch of people in Florida are just burning ballots. The president has decisively won Pennsylvania and Georgia and Arizona too. Dead people are voting in Nevada. More votes were cast in Wisconsin than there are people registered to vote. This is a mess. Except all of that is garbage. Hopefully you know that already. But still, the wave of misinformation and disinformation and whatever we want to call what the president is tweeting is far more than one person can be expected to wade through. It's far more than a whole mainstream journalism outlet could hope to debunk before more of it can flood the zone. Just how bad is it? Here is a clip for you from the pro-Trump One America Network on YouTube. This is their newscast. On the day after the election, I used the term newscast extremely loosely.
President Trump won four more years in office last night. North Carolina, Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin are all Trump's. Even Arizona, which somehow has Biden winning, is rampant with voter fraud. Nevada, same thing. This is a decisive victory for Trump. Yet, in the wee hours of the morning, when Trump had a large margin of victory, particularly in Pennsylvania and Michigan, the Democrat leadership of the state stopped the vote counts. Why on earth would you stop counting? Because Trump is clearly winning, and they need time to find more ballots.
So all of that is a fantasy. What am I supposed to do with that? What are we supposed to make of the fact that it has nearly 400,000 views on YouTube and tens of thousands of shares on Facebook? How did we end up so far down this insane road, and is there really any way back? Oh, and also, we will run through some of the strangest things that you hopefully didn't fall for. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Jane Ledivadenko is the disinformation reporter at BuzzFeed News. Jane, just, are you okay?
You know, are any of us? We're hanging in there. It's been a long few days.
As we talk right now, it's Thursday afternoon. Tell me the last piece of disinformation you debunked. Not the best, just the most recent.
Well, just 2 minutes ago, right before we speaking, I published a debunk of a series of videos that claim to show people that are 118, 119 years old voting in Michigan. However, they did not vote in Michigan. It was their descendants who voted. And the Michigan Secretary of State spokesperson confirmed to us that even if the off chance happens that somebody casts a ballot on behalf of a person who has died, even the day before Election Day, that ballot will not be counted.
Has it been relatively easy to get clear information from officials in the middle of this?
You know, I really have to say thank you to all the officials who are taking time out of their day to debunk these viral online rumors. Running elections is already a very difficult task. So when they take a moment to respond and explain what happened in a situation, it's incredibly helpful. On Tuesday, on Election Day, we had video that we couldn't really figure out what was happening there. The allegation was that a poll watcher was not allowed to enter the voting place that she was going to watch. And in order to figure out what happened in that video, officials in Pennsylvania actually physically went to the voting place to figure out what happened. So the officials have been very dedicated to trying to get as much accurate information out there as possible.
Is that something you find in general on your beat, or is this taken more seriously because obviously it's the biggest election in the world, et cetera, et cetera? But, you know, we've talked to you for all sorts of reasons, from COVID to politics. And I get the sense from your reporting that you're getting people you call taking this really seriously.
People are taking this extremely, extremely seriously, and not just officials, but also some of the social media companies, which is a real change of pace from the conversations that we've had in the past. I think Twitter in particular has been doing a really standout job. They have not been shy about putting warning labels on tweets that are false, even when they come from the president. Facebook has also put in warning labels on posts that are false, although theirs are not as prominent. Unfortunately, YouTube is kind of trailing the pack. They do put additional information under videos that are false, but those remain on the platform and remain extremely available to viewers.
Have you seen the One America Network quote-unquote newscast about how Donald Trump won? Don't believe your eyes.
Yes. So this was a 3-minute video by the One America network, which has always been a very conspiratorial network. It's one that Mr. Trump has complimented in the past, especially for their reporting that's quite questionable, actually. And in this 3.5-minute video, the reporter falsely, falsely is incredibly important here, falsely says that Trump has actually already won the election. And the way she positions it is by saying that Mr. Trump won before any of the mail-in ballots were counted. But of course, the mail-in ballots are the key here in this election in particular, because the coronavirus fears have caused a lot of early voting to go forward, which again is something that's extremely unusual for the US. So she essentially discounted all of those millions of absentee ballots that were mailed in. And YouTube's response was, well, we've stopped running advertising on this video, but the video remains up. And when I last checked, it got over 300,000 views, which is extremely significant for a video like that.
It's almost at 400,000 now.
Oh, great. Good news all around.
When you look at the types of disinformation you're seeing, is the difference this year, the mail-in ballots, is that kind of the basis of all of this stuff, of most of it? Are there other conspiracy theories floating around?
Right now, we see a huge effort to undermine the election results and to essentially claim voter fraud wherever the opportunity arises. And this is particularly true in battleground states. For example, in Pennsylvania, we saw more, almost double the amount of hoaxes than we saw anywhere else on Tuesday, because Pennsylvania is such an important swing state in this election, as it is in many other elections, but in this election in particular. And in terms of the medium the hoaxes are taking, it's honestly making our life very, very difficult, because the largest portion of them is video and photos, which are incredibly difficult to verify, incredibly difficult to search for or find the origin of. And frequently has us essentially doing a lot of extensive reporting to try to figure out what is happening in one single video, with every half an hour a new falsehood being uploaded. So it's been incredibly time consuming and overwhelming.
How does it compare to some of the natural disasters or the early days of the pandemic or other things you've covered that you've previously described for us as overwhelming?
I think this is different stakes. The pandemic, I think, is still by far the biggest global disinformation event that we've seen. And that's because the pandemic is everywhere. And so the false information around the pandemic is everywhere. But the US presidential campaign has been a disinformation presidential campaign. Between the pandemic and the anti-police brutality protesters, there have been a lot of falsehoods that have been spread and campaigned on as a part of the US election. So none of these online disinformation campaigns are, separate. We can't necessarily look at them as if they are isolated from one another. So for example, a big point in Mr. Trump's election campaign has been to demonize protesters, essentially say that they are burning down cities and are communists or socialists or what have you. And a lot of visuals were used alongside of that of fires being lit, cities burning. Now, we know that the vast, vast, vast majority of those protests are peaceful, but that's not the perception that we see online. So in terms of disinformation events, all of those big overwhelming things we've seen this year are just feeding into the presidential campaign and are now sort of coming to fruition this week.
Do you have any idea of where the majority of this comes from? I feel, and admittedly, I'm super amateur at this stuff, like in the past, a lot more of it seemed to be coming from foreign actors. And now it seems like it's all coming from America itself.
So the conversation about foreign actors in 2016 has been extremely prevalent. Because, of course, the Russian interference in the 2016 election has been well publicized and well known. And since then, we've looked to some state actors to see what it is they're doing. They have, of course, targeted the US with false information, but the vast majority of what we see in this moment is not only domestic, but is coming from supporters of Mr. President himself. Yesterday, we saw the White House press secretary and Mr. Trump's son, Eric Trump, spread just heaps of unverified falsehoods. So if we're having a conversation about where this is coming from, this is vastly, vastly domestic. And I want to be clear here, disinformation is bipartisan. And we have seen some falsehoods coming from the pro-Biden Democratic side as well, just not the same volume.
I'm going to get you to run through some of the more insidious ones that I've seen, but maybe first give me an example of one of the ones from the Biden side.
On Tuesday, we've seen a couple photos spread that claimed that Trump supporters were not allowing people into their voting places to cast a ballot. We've seen a couple of commentators claim that Mr. Biden has already won the election when, of course, there's no winner that has been called as of this time. So there are still those false claims out there, but again, not nearly as high in volume or really as mean-spirited as the ones coming from Mr. Trump's supporters.
I want to ask you about one in particular, probably not because it's the most important one, but because I think it might be a useful example. So tell me about the quote-unquote wagon of ballots that was being wheeled into a vote counting center.
That one was actually debunked by my colleague Craig Silverman, who has also been trying to sift through what's accurate and inaccurate online. And essentially what happened there is somebody claimed that there were all of these suitcases and a wagon of votes that was being wheeled into a Texas voting site. But the video of this, and again, just to put an accent on video, the videos have been just incessant, was actually just of a photographer who was loading his camera and other gear into a wagon for work. So those details escaped people because you couldn't see, you know, the particular things that were being voted into wagons, but it had a very innocent explanation.
How do you even go about trying to verify or debunk something like that? Because, you know, I've seen it and it's just like, it's a video. It looks shady. I have no idea what's in the wagon. It could be whatever you tell me it is, but I can see why that would be just so challenging.
Right. And that's why we're really warning people against sharing images and videos of things that they have not verified or things that are not coming from official sources, because those details can get very easily lost in the video. And for us, you know, it's not a matter of a quick reverse image search or sort of Googling for more context. We don't have that option with video. We do the reporting. We pick up the phone call. We try to find the people who were involved, and we break down what happened there, which is very, very time consuming. And it's much more time consuming than writing an Instagram post or a Facebook post or a tweet saying, look at this crazy thing that I saw in this video.
What about the one I saw on Twitter that Wisconsin had more votes cast than there are registered voters?
Oh, that's a fun one. Yeah. So that one came from an account that has been spreading a lot of false information. And essentially, this gentleman screenshot all of the votes that were cast in Wisconsin and said the amount of registered voters is actually lower than the amount of ballots that were cast. The problem is that he was using the amount of registered voters in 2018, not in 2020. And if you look at the 2020 numbers, they were perfectly reasonable. And while we're on this topic, the other thing that we've seen is people claiming that the voter turnout is much higher than it should be. So if you look at the amount of registered voters and ballots counts, and people are saying, you know, this is a 90% or 89% voter turnout. And that's not true, because the voter turnout is calculated based on how many voters are eligible to vote, not how many voters are registered to vote. So those numbers are a little bit finicky, right? These are really small details that without knowing, like I didn't 2 days ago, you won't necessarily notice the fake.
What about the Sharpies? I just want to get you going on all the things people need to know.
Oh, yeah. Let's go through all the 30 hoaxes that we've debunked in the last 2 days. No, the Sharpie gate has been a really fun one. So some folks have been claiming that they were specifically handed Sharpies at voting stations so that they would use the Sharpies to fill out their ballot. And that ballot, which was pro-Trump, would then be discounted because it was filled out with a Sharpie. This is a really it requires a lot of mental gymnastics to follow this Sharpiegate conspiracy, because the poll worker would have to know who the voter is casting their ballot for before handing them a Sharpie.
Right.
The other thing is that you're allowed to use a Sharpie to vote. The only difficulty that officials have warned against is that if a Sharpie bleeds and sort of leaves a stain on the ballot, then the machine might not be able to read it, and those ballots will have to be counted manually, which is nothing insidious. A lot of ballots have to be counted manually. That's part of the process.
When you started this misinformation gig, however long ago that was, it must feel like a long time now.
Almost 4 years ago to the day.
Good timing. Did you imagine that on Election Day 2020, you would be fact-checking direct misinformation coming from the official account of the president? Like, you know, we have won Pennsylvania and that kind of stuff? Because I can almost get the bad actors and the supporters who want to, you know, either gin up some anger or chase some social media clout or whatever it is. But did you ever picture that things would go this far?
I'm a pessimist, so my answer is yes. Mr. Trump has used his social media to forward falsehoods over the last 4 years, and for longer than that. some of the conspiracy theories that he pushes now go back to 2012, you know, 2010. So this is not a new behavior for Mr. Trump. And during the midterm elections, we've seen him use his Twitter account to push the same voter fraud narratives that he's pushing now. The details may be different, but the overarching narrative is the same. So in many ways, it kind of feels like the end of a Rocky montage. This is what's been on our plate for the last 4 years. And it's unfortunate to say, but it's not unexpected that Mr. Trump and Mr. Trump's supporters are spreading falsehoods in this incredibly important moment.
Where do we go from here? I mean, assuming that Biden's lead holds up, and granted, that might be a big assumption, but even still, if Biden becomes president, Mr. Trump's not going away, his supporters aren't going away, and more importantly to our conversation, the culture of disinformation isn't going away. Is there any way back from this? And what does it look like?
I'd really warn against speculating on how this race will conclude right now. There's just too much in the air. And where we go from here will, of course, largely depend on who's president. But an investigation that we published just last week into a white supremacist group called Patriot Front, which is a prolific spreader of offline propaganda in the US, shows that a lot of white supremacist groups in the US are preparing for a life after Mr. Trump. And many of them sort of don't feel like Mr. Trump is key to they're functioning. The online environment that we're talking about right now will likely shift depending on how the election turns out. But we can't make any predictions or speculations on how it will shift until we understand the results of the election itself.
Well, Jane, thank you for taking the time. I know you're super busy. And I hope you get some sleep soon.
We'll get some sleep next year, maybe. Thank you for having me.
Jane Ledivedenko, disinformation reporter at BuzzFeed News and possibly the world's hardest working journalist outside of those guys running those screens for the networks. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Email us, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. And of course, we are always in your favorite podcast player, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, pick one, we're there. Claire Broussard, Stephanie Phillips, and Ryan Clark are the producers for The Big Story, and Elisa Nielsen is our digital editor. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Try not to fall for anything dumb this weekend, and we'll talk Monday.